Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. I want to remind you before we jump into this conversation that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union. It's not a bank. It belongs to you. For more information, MECU.com. Or you can go to SteinerShow.org and click on their banner on our website. Before the special session started, we had a very interesting discussion. Democrats, Republicans, independent observers from out of state talking about what redistricting should mean and whether we do it right in Maryland or, in that fact, for a matter of fact, do we do it right in any state where it becomes a political football. And this year, today, we're going to talk about it again because we have just been through the special session. And except for a couple of minor tweaks and changes, the map that so many railed against was passed in the legislature. It doesn't. We'll find out what happens to the senatorial council and legislative districts. I mean to say, in the next session. But right now we are here with the map of Congress. We'll talk a bit about that as well. We're joined in studio by Delegate Mary Washington from District 43, a Democrat here in Baltimore, in her freshman year, going into the second year of her second year. Third year.
Yeah. Second. I know time does seem to fly, but no, I'm in 10 months, so in January it'll be a year. It's nice to be here, Mark.
It's good to have you. Joseph Getty is with us by phone. He's Maryland State Senator, Republican from District 5, which is in Baltimore and Carroll Counties. And Joe Getty, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you, Mark.
Radamasi Cabrera is with us, spokesperson for the Fannie Lou Hamer Political Action Committee, worked on redistricting since 1980, and the Fannie Lou Hamer Committee opposed, especially what happened in District 4, where Donna Edwards is the congressional representative. And Radamasi, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark.
410-319-8888. Did you follow it? Do you care? We'll find out. 410-319-8888. Many of you do, I know, who have called in before to talk about what this redistricting meant. Many of you listening to this program are from all over the state, but many of you live in Prince George's County that were deeply affected by these Montgomery County, by the changes down there with Donna Edwards District and Van Hollen's district and how those were redistricted. Some are arguing that, especially in Donna Edwards' case, that it diluted her district, made it more difficult for the most progressive congressperson to take on the next election, that it could have been a three minority-majority districts in the state. That didn't happen. And then again, the other districts where we see clearly this was part of this was headed towards getting rid of Roscoe Bartlett and the Republican congressman in Western Maryland. Is that a kosher way to do things, or is another way to do them? Did this represent the people's will, or was it done for political will? Or are they one and the same? 52% of all registered Democrats are African-American. If you add people of color, I forget what the number goes up to, but it's close to 58%. If that's the case, were they given short shrift in this? Did politics, Democratic political politics, trump racial unity and the idea of representing people who are minorities? What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. So how do we think about this? And then we'll go Robert in Baltimore County. You're the first caller up. Let's do a round robin with our guests to have their analysis of what they saw. And then we'll jump into the phones, and I will come in with my questions as well. Let me start, if I might, with Delegate Mary Washington, since you're sitting here in the studio.
That's great. Great. Again, it's great to be here. And before we get started, I want to really thank you for the work you're doing and covering Occupy Wall Street and just giving voices to people who are really trying to make this country a better place for the people who need it most. So I appreciate all
thank
of
you.
That. So I guess I could start that from my perspective as a Baltimore City delegate, and again, as a freshman, it was just very interesting listening and learning and seeing what's going on. I do have a background in population statistics and demography and redistricting. So I spent a lot of time really analyzing not only the governor's map, but also all the various third-party maps. And coming from Baltimore City, that's looking at declining population, that's looking at declining political influence, I was very I was happy that the governor's plan, or I should just say the redistricting committee's recommendation, was to take a regional approach to our declining population. So it was very important to me that we maintained our ability to significantly influence the three congressional districts, and we do.
The second, plan, third, and seventh you're talking
the second,
about.
Third, and seventh. And the plans that were proposed that would essentially, I feel, pack Baltimore City into a single congressional district. And pack a lot of do minority packing, which is the opposite of diluting. It's just kind of packing it into one district and having the effect of lessening the influence of African Americans and minorities across the entire delegation. So I was very disturbed by that. So I feel certainly there could have been some other decisions around the edges. But as far as being a Baltimore City delegate, being an African American delegate, I was very comfortable with how it was handled for my region.
Senator Joe Getty.
Mark, I think Governor O'Malley missed an opportunity to embrace the minority community on this redistricting plan. Most people think that redistricting should reflect the census. And what the census of 2010 showed us is a dramatic increase in minority population throughout the state. We went basically from a one-third minority state to a one-half of minority population in our state. We have 8 congressmen, but we only have 2 minority-majority districts. And so I think your listeners know from the media coverage that while there were a number of maps available, there really were 2 options. And one option was to be a partisan gerrymander where you go after Congressman Roscoe Bartlett in the 6th District and attempt to take the state from a 6-2 Democratic advantage to a 7-1. Or the second option, reward your base, which is the minority base in the Democratic Party, and create a third minority-majority district. You could create 4 minority-majority districts in the state, but at least show from the 2010 census a reflection that there'll be greater minority representation in the state, and the governor ignored that and went for the political decision.
Well, I have a question to ask you about that, Joe, but let me go to Rod Amasia Cabrera first.
Yes, thank you, Mark, for this opportunity. Right now, I guess only 2 words, in my opinion, can describe the governor's plan, the Hitchcock Committee's plan, and the law that was passed, and we believe that to be institutional racism. We feel that the state of Maryland clearly failed in its fiduciary responsibility to enforce the Voting Rights Act. And clearly at this point, we in the Fannie Lou Hamer Political Action Committee created a plan back during the hearings in June, which created 3 African-American majority plus 18 voting districts. We feel that the Hitchcock Committee ignored that process. We feel that the governor ignored that. And we feel that the General Assembly failed to do that, because I sort of disagree with Delegate Washington. I don't see the city of Baltimore being in one district as any kind of packing or stacking, but I see it representing the communities of interest in Baltimore. And clearly, I sort of fundamentally disagree with the governor. I disagree with the General Assembly. I disagree with this whole process that somehow regionalism should somehow take precedent over the requirements of the Voting Rights Act.
Well, I would just to respond, I just spoke in my introductory remarks as a Baltimore City delegate, but also say if we zoom out and look at the state as a whole, and then also if you take into account election results, if you really want to look at building opportunities for African Americans and minority communities, looking at Charles County, looking in that part of the state, and in fact what you create in the 5th District. And again, this is based on my own analysis, and Mark will tell you I've got all of my spreadsheets, et cetera, out here, as I see some really exciting opportunities coming out of Charles County, where a lot of people are starting to move there. A lot of African-Americans are moving there. A lot of minorities are moving there. And that district is really poised also, to have even more of an influence on who's elected. Again, the Voting Rights Act protects our right to elect our person of choice. And I do believe that in looking at the 5th District, looking at the 4th District, looking at 7, and certainly even looking at 4, that right is protected. I would never vote for a map that would violate that right.
Well, Mary, we heard that on the Senate floor and obviously on the House floor. The Democratic message point was, look at the 5th. The 5th is turning. That's Steny Hoyer's district. And at some point, the fifth will be a minority-majority district. But you're telling minorities that it'll be another 10 years before we create that district, and you're going to have to wait until Steny Hoyer leaves office in order to have a third member of the House of Representatives in Maryland. And obviously, with the census numbers that we have, that third member should come today. You shouldn't have to wait 10 years for somebody else to draw a new map to create that district.
Well, and it's a good question, that, Joe, and then I will go right to the phones. Robert, when I come to your call after this comment. And I have questions like this. This is not just targeting what you were just saying, Joe, because I have similar questions for all three guests in from their comments. But some people look at it as many people thought that this was look at this as a redistricting map that was to keep certain political people in power and to not open the door for another minority representative, whether that be a Latino or whether it be somebody African-American. Some folks would argue that it was a tad ingenuous of the Republican opposition to all of a sudden worry about minority representation rather than just really fight for what they believe in, which is making sure that the majority of that the numbers of Republicans had their voice.
Well, I think Radomasi and the Fannie Lou Hamer PAC and the Republicans were on the same track here because when the redistricting committee and Governor O'Malley were asked to justify their map, they said, well, the first place we went was to the incumbents, and the incumbents wanted this, and the incumbents wanted that, and the incumbents wanted this. And so if you take the Democratic incumbent members and you give them what they want, and then you go to the 6th district and dilute what's been a long tradition of a Western Maryland, you know, diverse representation in the state and start to cut that apart, your end result is a map that's planned not to add a new minority member to the House of Representatives, but to add another white Democrat to the House of Representatives, because that 6th district is carved into Montgomery County, and candidates are already, you know, announcing that they want to run. And so you may go from 6-2 to 7-1, but among Democrats, you're going to go from four whites and two minorities to five whites and two minorities. And that's that's where the minority representation should come in under this census that we have from 2010.
Well, see, this is interesting because I've found it interesting on the House floor, and also I listened to the hearings and the debate in the joint committees, that here's an opportunity, in fact, where the 6th district is proposed to be 28% minority, and the proposal that the GOP presented makes it 12%. Minority, and there's a little bit of not in my backyard. I mean, you just talked about the 6th district having a history of being a diverse population. In fact, that's not really the case. What we see in the proposal from the Republican Party was actually to really consolidate along racial lines, but from a different perspective, consolidate white votes and sort of protect a couple of districts into almost having no responsibility to have to pay attention to the votes of the minority populations in their districts.
Let me jump and get some listeners in here and get a call in and come back, because there's some really important questions, I think, for us to delve into here. We're talking about the redistricting process. You're hearing some of the discussion. Many people think that this was a diminution of potential power of what are known as minority communities that may be half and half in the state at this moment. That it also is a diminution of the voices of more conservative and mostly white thinkers and voters in this state. What are your thoughts at 410-319-8888? Was it crass political politics, or is this just the nature of reality? Is there a better way to do this? We'll talk about during the course of the hour as well. And Robert in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Thank you, Mark and guests, for allowing me to speak on this topic. All I really want to basically say is that when I think about, you know, redistricting and basically like gerrymandering and all those kind of you know, basically like, like under the table type of dealings going on, you know, it puts me in the mind of the fact that basically, you know, as an African-American male, an educated African-American male, that is, you know, this to me is just another tactic used by the so-called GOP, because at this point, from my political perspective, I don't really see a whole lot of difference anyway between Democrats and Republicans, quite honestly. But what I really want to say, though, is that between the GOP actively on a national scale trying to basically, you know, quicken or basically, trying to mess up or manipulate the new voting registration dates by moving everything up to basically, I guess, minimize or marginalize the voting impact of people of color. And now this is another tactic as far as this whole redistricting situation going on. What they're doing is they're pretty much trying to stem the tide of the inevitable, which is basically the fact that, yes, you got Latinos, as we all know, which is pretty much the fastest growing minority group there is, not to mention the fact that African Americans still comprise about, 12-13% of the population. But what they're trying to do for the most part is trying to marginalize the voting power of people of color. And this, to me, is just another tactic that they're using, they're utilizing, not to mention things like unauthorized pretext stops with officers constantly pulling over African-American men who have legitimate licenses, registration, whole nine. They're doing anything and everything to curtail the political power by either stripping you of your voting rights outright or gerrymandering or, for the most part, even changing registration dates. All these things, nothing more than underhanded tactics used towards undermining our voting rights. That's all it is to me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Robert. There are instances across the country where the new voting rules taking place in Wisconsin, Ohio, that people are arguing in another show, we've had many debates on this, are diminishing the power of Democrats on purpose and to call out votes of people of color and older people and younger people. But here in Maryland, are we doing the same thing the other way around?
Well, let me see if I can.
Who's that? Is that Radamasi?
I've been kind of.
Go ahead.
Listening. I sort of disagree with Delegate Washington. This is not about Republican sincerity, Republican behavior being somehow disingenuous. This is really an internal fight between white Democrats and black Democrats. And I think we need to just put the cards on the table. Maryland will be, in the next 5 years, majority minority, in the next 10 years, majority black. The question is going to be, who is going to control Maryland? Will Maryland somehow be a state where a group of, white men, governor, state, U.S. Senate, president of the Senate, Speaker of the House, Attorney General, control what is going to be a black majority state? I think the 2012 redistricting is the first battle around clearly, will the white power structure legitimately come to the table and talk about the empowerment of black people statewide?
Now, let's talk about how there are a couple of questions here before we go to Aaron next caller up. I mean, is this a reality we're facing here? I mean, is this politics that has kind of shortchanged a lot of people in the state of Maryland? If in fact people of color in Maryland make up whatever the real number is, 50%, 48% of state population, why shouldn't there have been another district? I mean, are we protecting Steny Hoyer? Are we protecting the powers that exist, which is why this is happening? And it seems at the same time, when you look at what they did to Donna Edwards District 4, it was, some people would argue, it looks like you're marginalizing what for some is the most progressive voice in U.S. Congress from the state of Maryland and putting her in a chance of losing her seat or having serious opposition to her seat because if there are large numbers of more conservative voters that are white in Anne Arundel County voting, could offset what could happen to her.
Well, I think the battle for there is actually will be in the Democratic Party. I mean, it's still the case that the Democrats are very strong in terms of performance in that district as it's drawn. Again, my statements are not to defend how that plan worked out. It's just kind of let's use real facts. So any kind of challenge would actually come from within the party. The Democratic Party, and the challenge would come from within Baltimore City. So that's why you do see, Prince George's County. So if you speak to people in that delegation, you'll see that they were actually split and actually, I believe everybody from that from the Prince George's delegation voted for the map. So I think you'd have to ask what's going on in that part.
Even there, politically speaking,
the world.
And maybe Radha Mace, you live in that area. Maybe you can speak to this, and we'll come back to Joe and to our callers. I mean, one of the things that happened in the election with Donna Edwards before, not to get too sidetracked for this, was that the first time she took on the powers to be in Prince George's County, she lost. Not by much, but she lost. And her base of support came from western Prince George's County and eastern Montgomery County, who really pushed her candidacy. She's lost those votes now.
Okay, let me see if I can tap in and make some clarity.
Is this Radha Mace? Go ahead. Yes.
Not about Donna Edwards.
No, I know it's not. I'm just asking the question.
Okay, the question I'm trying to raise is this is about the African-American population in Montgomery County, in Prince George's County, in Charles County. The fundamental question is, as you said a few moments ago, should there be a third African-American majority congressional district, regardless of whether or not they elect Donna Edwards to one of those three districts or elect someone that's Buddhist? I mean, the real question isn't around clearly who gets elected. It's really about the communities of interest in those areas, Prince George's, Charles, and Montgomery. And the argument we're having is, as you said earlier, why should we wait 10 more years to protect a white incumbent because he one day might be Speaker of the House? If he's so confident he's going to be progressive and correct, then why not let Steny Hoyer represent a overwhelmingly African-American district if he's going to be the best possible congressman? And again, your question about where the delegation stands, I agree. Only two delegates out of Prince George's County voted against the governor's plan. Only Senator Muse voted against the governor's plan. And clearly, Fannie Lou Hamer feels that right now the delegation really is in the hip pocket of Senator Mike Miller. He gives the money. They run on his slate. He clearly is the problem, which is why there is, in my opinion, no independent African-American politics in Prince George's County. It's all clearly, as I call it, 21st century slaves to the system that Mike Miller controls.
Those are very strong words, Radha Mace, but I think you're not alone in, you're not alone in those feelings. In that analysis. And again, let me ask Joe Getty something, and we'll come back to the phones here. Joe, and the other part is, I mean, it seems to me that what also got lost here, whether you I'm not a Republican, or actually nor am I a Democrat, but I think of myself as a raging independent. But when you look at Western Maryland, the majority of voters, Frederick County and West, especially Frederick City and West, are and north to that, Carroll County and big parts of the area, are conservative Republicans, from moderate conservative over to Tea Party Republicans. And they'll no longer have a voice.
Well, that's what I meant by using the term diversity. You know, in the General Assembly, people like to talk about one Maryland, and I don't think Maryland is a homogenous state. I think we do have diversity. We have diversity in minority population. We also have diversity with a minority party. And the crux of the choice between redistricting plans was this. The map that Governor O'Malley presented was a partisan gerrymander in order to go after a Republican member of the House of Representatives, because that's what will get national attention. And there were lots of message points during the General Assembly session, but once the session's over, everyone has come out in the media now and basically said there will be a national focus on this race because it's an opportunity for Democrats to pick up seats in the U.S. House of Representatives, one of the few opportunities nationwide. Does that help Governor Martin O'Malley and his national prominence? Absolutely. Does that help Congressman Hoyer and his efforts in Congress? Absolutely. So the choice was a political choice to go after a Republican seat and enhance Democrat numbers in the House of Representatives. The other choice is what Radha Mace is talking about, and I had a plan that did this. Fannie Lou Hamer had a plan that did this. It's very easy to draw a third minority-majority district in the state of Maryland, and the census numbers support it. minority representation should increase in the state. And in the plan that I drew one that was based on giving Hispanic population 25% of a district that also was 40% African-American and 8.8% Asian. In the Fannie Lou Hamer plan, they drew three districts that had over 50% African-American representation. So I think people were misled a little bit at the beginning of this process when the people who created the O'Malley plan said, well, the minorities told us they wanted two minority-majority districts, and it was a tough job, but we got two districts both at 54%. You can get two districts at 54% and then get another district at 40% African-American and 25% Hispanic, or another one at 52% African-American, and it's easy to do. But redistricting is a question of choosing your priorities. Governor O'Malley and the Maryland General Assembly chose the priority of national political politics, and what Rademacy and me and others in the General Assembly, especially Senator Anthony Muse from Prince George's County, said is, at this time, with these census numbers, this isn't fair. The priority should be increased minority representation in Congress.
I guess I just would want to just address the political choices. And I want to say that I could absolutely see a way. I don't disagree that there are ways to draw the map that would have reached the goals that you articulated. But I would also say, from a national perspective, sending people to Congress who are more likely to vote for a jobs bill, sending people to Congress who are more likely to support a woman's right to choose, sending people to D.C. who are more likely to support some type of health care program or some type of benefit for seniors, to me seems to be a goal that is consistent with my constituency. And so, again, I don't accept that it's, sir, absolutely the result could, in fact, provide the kind of national attention that you're speaking about for the governor. But I also think that it's also going to provide real opportunities when we're looking across the country where people are consistently voting against any attempt to do things that support the problems or address the problems of poor people. So, I think that that the characterization of this as simply about Democratic or even simply about an individual's political future is really not a fair analysis.
I tend to disagree, if I could sort of jump in.
Yeah, we're going to take it. And after we have to take it, Aaron's been waiting forever to go on the line, so other callers as well. But go ahead, the Rademacy.
I still think, as I said a moment ago, that this is an internal fight between African-American Democrats and white Democrats. I am a Democrat, a card-carrying Democrat. In 2004, I worked with Howard Dean, and our argument then, when is the Democratic Party going to be taking control of by the Democratic wing? I think the real problem in places like Maryland and other states is that Democratic leadership has become soft. You use the word Democratic performance. The problem is Democrats do not know how to talk to communities that are majority white, which is why Congressman Sarbanes, Congressman Hoyer, and the rest clearly want these Democratic performance numbers, because somehow if Congressman Sarbanes is in a majority white district, he's going to have difficulty being able to have the kind of Democratic performance numbers. If Congressman Dutch Rubisberger is in a majority white, overwhelmingly white district, he's going to have trouble. So to me, I see it as a blatant dilution of the black vote so that Democrats can be, in my opinion, lazy and not really solve issues of health, issues of the environment, issues of jobs. So clearly I reject the notion that somehow black people need to be the underpinning which allows white progressives and white Democrats to lead the good charge on Capitol Hill. And as Governor Dean said, when is the Democratic wing? When are folks going to compete around issue? Why is there this fear congressional district is somehow 90% white, it is automatically going to vote Republican.
We can comment on that when we come back from this break. But before we get to that comment, we go right to Aaron, who's been waiting very patiently to have his voice heard. 410-319-8888. Line up for your voices to be heard on redistricting. We'll get to your calls. 1-2-3. We'll be right back with our guests. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're looking at redistricting this hour with Delegate Mary Washington from the city of Baltimore, District 43. She's a Democrat. Senator Joe Getty, who is a Maryland State Senator, as I just said, Republican from District 5, which is Baltimore and Carroll counties. And Radames Cabrera, who is spokesman for the Fannie Lou Hamer Political Action Committee and has worked on redistricting since 1980. If I have this right, Radames, you are taking this plan to court. Is that correct?
Correct. It is our intention to file in federal court in Greenbelt, Maryland, a class action suit where we allege that the state of Maryland has violated Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And right now we're in the process of trying to literally put together the right team of experts, the appropriate amount of money, and our goal is clearly by the 1st of November to have this case in federal court. And then secondarily, we want to go to the Justice Department, Civil Rights Division, and actually get the Justice Department to come in to Maryland and clearly under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act to stop the April 3rd primary, the same way they're now in Texas under the Voting Rights Act, Section 5, trying to stop elections there, and clearly are looking at elections in a variety of areas, because again, we and Fannie Lou Hamer believe again that the state has clearly violated federal law, that it has institutionalized racism, that Montgomery County clearly is violating the Constitution, Article 14, in terms of the whole equal protection process. So we clearly want the Justice Department, under the Attorney General Holder, to come in and vigorously enforce federal laws the same way they're enforcing federal laws around immigration in Arizona, immigration in other areas, and come in. Because we in Fannie Lou Hamer also believe that the state of Maryland overstepped its boundaries when it passed the prison adjustment to the numbers, and that it had no right to make those kind of adjustments and downsize the state numbers by 6,000 in terms of looking at congressional redistricting.
Because what he's talking about is using numbers of people who are incarcerated, let's say, in Hagerstown, will be used in that number.
Our complaint in Fannie Lou Hamer is not how they relocated the addresses of particular individuals, but that somehow the state numbers are 6,000 less than the federal numbers. It's clearly like Arizona. State of Maryland could not go in and adjust downward those numbers. We think they made a legal error doing that, and clearly the plan should be thrown out because we believe that the state of Maryland had no right to use its interpretation of census numbers. And I notice, having worked with the Congressional Black Caucus in 1980, because we feel they violated Public Law 94-171.
All right. Let me just jump here. Unless you were about to say something, Mary, I'm just going to jump into back to our listeners at 410-319-8888. And Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Well, this proves why this makes me glad I didn't vote for Martin O'Malley last year. And it proves my statement last year that I'd rather vote for the Grand Wizard of the Klan, given what we've gotten from Martin O'Malley.
I remember that.
This redistricting map. And I say that Martin O'Malley, the Democrats, don't get black folks. They proved it with this map. And I would advise anybody who would even think about voting for Martin O'Malley or some of these state Democrats to tell them to go to hell next election day.
Aaron,
because they have not earned your vote as black folks if they can pull stunts like this.
All right.
This proves they haven't earned it. Any time they could portray the African-American community, the most loyal voting black in this state to them, tells me they have no loyalty to us, and which therefore we should have no loyalty to them.
Thank you so much for your call. As usual, man, it's always good to hear your voice. There is an email here. Let me pull it up that I really want to read to you all that I thought I had up, but getting this web to work. We have an email from someone who wrote into the Mark Steiner Show face page. And one of the things that she wanted to know, and I get her name as soon as I get her name back up here, is that she wanted to ask specifically the state senator and the member of the House of Delegates that we have in the studio with us now, that she thinks the entire thing is a sham, what happened in this redistricting in the House of Delegates. And she wanted to know, would people, the state senator and the delegate in the room, would they vote to change the process so that a completely independent commission would be established to insist on a voting system that does not have anything to do with politics? Senator?
I agree with the emailer that the process is a sham, and I would vote for some changes. An independent panel would be the first step, but I think the problem this time was in the way Governor O'Malley approached the problem. I think he knew from the start that he was going to target one of the two Republican districts to go to a 7-1 Democratic majority, and the whole process was tailored to have the least amount of public participation or public reflection on the process as possible. When Governor Schaefer and Governor Glenn Denning appointed their redistricting committees, they did it while we were still in legislative session early in the year. In this case, Governor O'Malley appointed his committee on July the 4th, and their first meeting was July the 6th, when, you know, all of Maryland's on vacation. The hearings were held in July and August and had very light turnout because it was summer months. And then we were told in August we would have an October the 17th session, but the map wasn't released, the map wasn't released. You get less than 2 weeks before the session, the governor's redistricting advisory committee released their recommendations, right, of which we knew the governor was going to make changes. And his final map wasn't released until 6:24 on Saturday before the Monday when we were meeting at 10 o'clock. If you want to make sure the press doesn't pay any attention to your process, then when you're in session, you start talking about a gas tax increase and a jobs program. And I think the media was manipulated throughout this whole process to have as little of a focus on redistricting as possible, because he knew it would have your callers like Aaron questioning the process and your emailer calling it a sham.
But specifically, her question was this, and Mary, you can jump at it and Senator, if you want to respond again. What she wrote is, and her name is Stacey Gurian Sherman, wrote in, "The redistricting is a sham. It's the worst kind of gerrymandering. Mark asked Maryland delegates and senators to be on the record on whether they would vote to have a nonpartisan commission make any redistricting to take the politics and unfairness out of it." Was her question.
Okay, so thank you so much, Stacey. I don't think that even in appointing commissions, you take the politics out of it. But what I will say is that there, the League of Women Voters and a number of people have been, there's a great video, actually a documentary about this process in California, well, a number of places, but specifically following the attempt in California to do just that. I'm not going to say I'm going to vote for something without seeing a bill. I've made that mistake before, so I'm not going to do it again. But I absolutely believe that it should be more public. I definitely believe that there could and should be an opportunity to review an actual proposed plan and take it around the state. I would have liked to have seen that. And also, one of the big problems is that our Maryland Constitution is silent on how we handle this. So I do think we should look at maybe setting more policies and laws about exactly how the process is. But as it is, any governor is free to do it the way that they choose. And so that's what we need to approach and to address.
Mark, if I could sort of...
Well, Mace, go ahead.
Same comment, because, again, I don't have a vote as a citizen. My concern is
Clearly, there are laws on the book. I feel that the Attorney General, Doug Gansler, was, you know, derelict in his responsibilities to enforce the Voting Rights Act. I think he was derelict in his responsibilities to enforce civil rights legislation, that he was derelict in his responsibility to look at the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, and that his representative, Dan Freeman, who was the advisor to the commission, clearly did an inadequate job. And again, we and Fannie Lou Hamer are constantly asking for where is the written documentation. In fact, I can raise that to Delegate Washington. Were there any memorandums? Were there any legal opinions? Were there any documents at all anywhere coming out of the Attorney General's office, be it Doug Gansler, be it Dan Freeman, which gave the commission or the General Assembly guidance on how to interpret the Voting Rights Act, guidance on how to interpret the Constitution?
So what I can give you is that we have states in this country, because of their past history, that do have to submit their redistricting plans to the Attorney General, the federal Attorney Generals, and have to have their redistricting plans scrutinized. Maryland is not one of those states.
Right. That's a Section 5 issue.
Exactly.
Section 2.
Finish then.
Yeah. So again, I should also say that I would support and defend any citizen's right to bring this map to challenge this map.
If
that is a protected right. And
as a legislator, as a delegate in Baltimore, did you not have a fiduciary right to ask for a legal opinion if the Attorney General is saying, I don't have a role in this? While simultaneously, Jean Hitchcock is saying she's being advised by Dan Freeman, who's a spokesperson, because she said that back in the July meeting in Prince George's County. She said that I'm relying on Dan Freeman. I'm not a legal redistricting expert. So clearly, where was Dan Freeman's legal opinion? And I'm told now, after the bill was passed, that it was Bruce Kane out of the University of California, Berkeley, who provided the legal document. I'm still trying to see that document. And again, I'm asking Delegate Washington, did you see the Professor Kane document? Did you see?
Okay, let her answer the question, Madam Mace.
No. And fiduciary responsibility, I don't think I have a fiduciary responsibility. I do have a responsibility to the people that I represent to look at a map and see, does it support what I believe are our interests? Does it, and that's what I, again, that's what I did based on my own analysis. I would defend, and we will see. I mean, certainly if this map violates the Voting Rights Act, I will be the first to support that. So
we're going to court, and we're going to have a federal judge panel.
The original question here was, I mean, I understand that this is going to go to court, and we'll see what the judges say. And there's been opinions in the last shows we had for and against the idea, the possibility of whether this really fits in the Voting Rights Act or not, and we'll see how that transpires. And I think that it's on the table and on the open that this has done nothing to increase minority representation in the state of Maryland over the next 10 years in our congressional delegation, and that's something that people need to be aware of as well. But I think that the overwhelming sentiment I get from a lot of listeners and from the emails is that people want to see the process done differently in the future. And I'm getting a sense that neither you nor the senator or many other people I've talked to in the House of Delegates or the State Senate have any thirst for an independent commission that would take it out of the hands of the governor and out of the hands of the state legislature and give us something which is much more objective to look at and vote on.
Mark, I would vote for something like that. I think in response to Stacey's question, and I think we've had those bills in the past. I think County Executive John Leopold, when he was in the House of Delegates, proposed bills for an independent commission. The stark reality is the power is in the hands of the governor and the presiding officers. And those bills will go nowhere in the Maryland General Assembly. They've been introduced before. I may have co-sponsored one in the late 90s. And the switch of power will go nowhere. My comments on the sort of lack of transparency of the process this year were tailored to I am preparing legislation for this session that would create some process requirements in redistricting that would require the governor to announce his panel early in the process, that would require the panel to make recommendations and then have a hearing on their map. This governor's redistrict advisory committee had 12 regional hearings with no map proposed, and then proposed a map that went straight to the governor. They should have a public comment process once they've come up with their recommendations, which was entirely short-circuited because the administration did not want minorities paying attention to what was going on in this process.
Well, I'm happy to say that I was going to agree with everything you said except that last sentence, but you know, I agree that we should be transparent. I believe that it would have really benefited the process to have had a map that everyone could look at, even if it was the map that we ended up being proposed at the last minute. I absolutely believe that more transparency is always better, more eyes, more people involved in it. And, you know, the one of the things I think that listeners should know is that in terms of the congressional representation that we have nationally, Maryland ranks second, still, even after this map, ranks second in the country in the percent of African-American Congress people, and that we rank third in the total number of African-American legislators. We definitely have still a lot to go, but, you know, right now we represent. And, again, I'm speaking African-Americans because people are sort of late having minority and African American in the same breath, so I think we have to make sure you see what we're talking about here, and we have a long way to go, but it's certainly that the state is leading the nation such that it is in representation. We have a lot more to go, but we're nowhere near I think as bad as people are trying to characterize this process as being.
And let me, so people who called in asking a question, we'll go to the phones after this. We keep using the word gerrymandering. What does that mean? And what it means is that this comes from actually around 1812 when Elbridge Gerry, who was governor of Massachusetts, manipulated his districts. We drew the districts for the state Senate election in Massachusetts so that his party, which was then what's called the Democratic Republican Party, I think it sounds like a strange party name for our world today, but maybe not in some people's eyes. But at any rate, he gerrymandered manipulated those districts so that his party would win. So he was given his name, yeah. Gerrymandering. And some people would argue, if you look at this map or the map that Glenn Denning did, or the map that most governors do in the United States of America, that gerrymandering is what we do in America today, as opposed to kind of honest looking at the picture. I think that happens not just in Maryland. It's happening in Ohio. It's happening in Wisconsin. It's happening all over, except maybe places like Iowa and California, which have relatively independent commissions that actually do the mapping. They have a very different process in those states, Arizona being another that has a process similar to that. And I think
But that is a relatively recent phenomenon, Mark. Prior legislative districts, congressional districts in Maryland, generally went county by county. And up until 1972, your congressional districts were compact. They were contiguous. William Donald Schaefer's district in 1992 was not the ink spot test, ink splatter on a blotter, like you received under Paris Glendenning and under Martin O'Malley. It's a very recent phenomenon. It's been sort of perpetuated by the use of computers to fine-tune political advantage based on recent voting results, and what Elbridge Gerry did years ago was he did draw an oddly shaped district that went along the border of Massachusetts,
right.
And a cartoonist drew it as a salamander.
Right.
So to finish your story, it's a gerrymander based on Governor Elbridge Gerry and the salamander shape of the district.
That's true. Thank you for finishing the story correctly. I appreciate that.
But there's also some real demographic changes in the western part. The reality is that the western part of the state, also like some of our urban areas, did either lost population or did not grow at the same rate.
True.
Also, when you look at it, that is absolutely not true. The Democratic message points are absolutely false.
And
I know how to count, and I can tell you, you know, we can trade maps if we want or numbers we want. You also have a shift in terms of what Frederick is starting to look like. Again, what this state is starting to change and move around. So beyond race.
This is the Democratic message points. There's an I-270 corridor. If the governor wanted to create a minority-majority district, that could be his priority, and it would have nothing to do with the I-270.
And those states that have independent commissions like Arizona, what kind of legislation is coming out of those bodies?
Roscoe Bartlett's district was the third fastest-growing congressional district in the state. There was not a loss of population in Western Maryland.
Well, especially in the eastern part of his district.
If I could jump in as a point of personal privilege, since I know the clock is running.
Yeah, because we have about 2 minutes. We don't have much time to run, so go, Rodemace.
Right. Because right now, I think the issue you're talking about of congressional is important. I still think we need for your listeners to talk about legislative. If Delegate Washington is really concerned about transparency, if she's really concerned about communities of interest in Baltimore, I think clearly she should be talking to the governor, so that he doesn't, as Senator Getty says, less than 24 or 48 hours before the public hearing, demand to see the legislative map, demand to clearly see and have public hearings. Because to me, if, again, he is honest, and this is not an internal black-white Democratic fight, and the governor doesn't want to, again, be charged of institutional racism vis-a-vis the legislative plan, why not present your plan? Why not give several days and weeks of public scrutiny on the legislative
line? Well, let me, since in the interest of time, Mary, did you want to respond?
I think it's a great idea.
Right. I think this has been a really fascinating discussion. I think, do we have time to get a caller in here? Toward the end of the day? Is that no? Are we out of time completely? Is that yes? We are. Okay, so I think this has been, we will look at this very closely when we come back. And I apologize to our listeners. This is a very intense debate and discussion, which is, I think was a good one.
That's good.
And I appreciate all of our guests being here today. Delegate Mary Washington, always a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for representing us here in the city.
Thank you.
Good job you do. Senator Joe Getty, same to you. Thank you so much for joining us, and appreciate your forthrightness being part of this program.
Great to talk to your listeners.
And thank you, Senator.
Rodemace Cabrera, good to have your viewpoints on, and we will follow in the cases you all are submitting and see where they go.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you all.
All right. Bye-bye.
And we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to take a shift and talk to Derek Jensen, who's a very radical, interesting environmental thinker who will jostle our complacency about where we are. So stay with us for that. We'll be right back, and then we're going to have a little Theater Baltimore trip to Center Stage. We have more coming up with Theater Action Group, an incredibly political, interracial group in this town that is doing wonderful theater. We'll talk with them later in the week, but all that coming up, so please stay with us.